Hello and welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this half hour I'll be bringing you the Vermilion County News with a concentration on Danville and surrounding communities. In our first article for today, Cooking for a Crowd. Danville Area Community College's Culinary Arts adult students busily chopped, boiled, and baked Monday morning in preparation for feeding the masses in the Mary Miller Center's hospitality room during this week's National Junior College Athletic Association's Men's Division II basketball tournament. Culinary arts instructor Dana Wheeler said the amount of food the students will prepare this week is astounding. 20 pounds of dry macaroni, 40 pounds of meatloaf, 75 pounds of pork butt, and 75 pounds of beef brisket. In the past, more than a dozen area high school students who are in College Express have helped prepare the ingredients for the dishes, but they weren't available this year because the schools in Vermilion County are on spring break. Wheeler said she is thankful she has more adult culinary arts students this year, and each student has volunteered to work 16 hours this week during what would be their spring break. They have next week off for their spring break, she said. The hospitality room feeds about 600 to 700 people, including corporate sponsors, administrators from the schools, coaches, and corporate sponsors' guests. The culinary arts program and prepares three meals a day, every day, during the week-long tournament, with local restaurants filling in with donations of food. We probably serve 300 meals a day, said Wheeler. Since they get donations, we try not to make some of the same things. The menu for this year's NJCAA hospitality room includes meatloaf, chicken pot pie, pork butt, fried chicken, beef brisket, and baked tilapia. When planning this year's menu, Wheeler relied on past favorites. I know how much food we made last year, and every year I tweak it, she said. Meatloaf went really fast last year, so we're going to make more of that and more fried chicken this year, she said. The baked potato bar that we tried out for the first time last year was also a big hit, so we're going to offer that again on Friday, she said. There was chili, cheese, and broccoli for their potatoes. The works. One suggestion Wheeler and the culinary arts students are going to follow through with this time is cutting the desserts into smaller pieces so hospitality room guests can sample several treats, such as Texas sheet cake, pineapple upside down cake, chocolate chip cookies, and banana nut muffins. Also new this year are a few breakfast offerings that will be served in addition to the customary egg casserole the culinary arts students make every year for the tournament. I used to be egg casserole every day, Wheeler said. We make our own cinnamon raisin bread, so we're going to use it to make French toast this year. Preparing and cooking the food will be a constant day-long activity this week. We're prepping today for tomorrow, Wheeler explained Monday morning. They're getting the ingredients ready for the breakfast casserole, macaroni and cheese, and pasta salad. We've already baked cookies and Texas sheet cake, she added. Tomorrow we've got biscuits and gravy for breakfast, so we've cooked the sausage for the gravy. Once we're done, we'll start prepping for the next day, she said. This is the best learning experience for them because it's hands-on. Greg Eccles, who will graduate from the culinary arts program this spring, said he's accustomed to cooking for a crowd. I'm used to it. I cook at home and I have a large family, he said. The National Junior College Athletic Association Division II's Men's National Basketball Tournament tips off at 9 a.m. today in Mary Miller Gymnasium on the Danville Area Community College campus. It is the first of six games today, and the tournament runs through Saturday. DACC staff rescue a stranded teen. After traveling 380 miles from Creston, Iowa, members of the Southwest Community College basketball team probably were asking themselves Monday morning, "Are we there yet?" while en route to Danville Area Community College. The first seed team in the National Junior College Athletic Association Men's Division II basketball tournament, which is being played this week at DACC, was only 20 miles away from Danville when its bus broke down on Interstate 74 near Ogden. One of the teams had bus trouble, so we sent out two of our jitneys to pick them up, DACC President Stefan Nako said. Tim Bunton, DACC's athletic director, and Brad Weaver, supervisor of DACC's campus services and graphics, came to the rescue of the stranded team and filled two DACC shuttle buses with hoops players. The Iowa Community College isn't the only team that had transportation trouble on Monday. The gas basketball team from Lewisburg, North Carolina, had a bus breakdown after arriving in Danville. Fire division, pension, and other subjects are on the expected agenda tonight. Since Mayor Scott Eisenhower earlier this month presented a budget proposal cutting 16 firefighters, Ward 3 Alderwoman Sherry Pickering has asked how many firefighters could be hired back to reduce the overtime cost. "I know we will always have some overtime," Pickering said, but she added the estimated $700,000 in overtime costs this fiscal year and proposed $1.5 million in overtime next fiscal year is excessive. After a Saturday City Council budget study session, the City Council's agenda for tonight's meeting has been amended to include a vote on the proposed increase in the city's public safety pension fee. Pickering also would like to see a separate vote on these firefighter layoffs and not wait until a final budget vote next month. This would be a vote she'd have to request. Mayor Scott Eisenhower said the only city council agenda was amended to include the increase to the public safety pension fee so the city council knows what revenue is or isn't available for the budget. Eisenhower has proposed a $4 increase in the monthly public safety pension fee. The $4 base public safety pension fee would increase to $8 a month. The City Council in December 2015 increased the public safety pension fee from $2 to $4 per structure to cover increased pension costs. Property owners pay the fee on their garbage and sewer bills. The pension fee now increases $1 more for every 5,000 square feet of rooftop with a $32 cap. The increase would mean a cap of $36 on the monthly fee. Everyone basically would be paying double what they pay today, Eisenhower said. The increased fee would generate another $551,000 or $1.1 million in total. Police and fire pension funds are increasing more than $1 million in the city's next fiscal year budget. Projections show the police and five pension funds increasing in the next 3 years by 19%, 25%, and 13%, respectively, according to city officials. Some aldermen have continued to question whether the city can help the firefighters safe and the city safe with a reduction of 16 firefighters. This would reduce the number of firefighters from 42 to 26. It equates to $1.3 million needed to balance the budget following a firefighters' contract arbitration decision, according to Eisenhower. "First of all, having the layoffs will cost us more money than keeping the firefighters," Pickering said about the overtime, unemployment, and other costs, and also leaving the fire department with one full shift that isn't covered. Then there also are the vacation, sick, and other days off the firefighters have. Eisenhower has said he wants to look at ways to manage hours and manpower differently, including reducing the number of firefighters off each day to help with overtime. However, that issue is in contractual language in the firefighters' contract for at least another year. Pickering wants to see firefighters hired back so the city won't have at least $1.5 million estimated in overtime costs next fiscal year. The city council meets at 6 p.m. tonight at the Robert E. Jones Municipal Building, located at 17 West Main Street. A special meeting of the City Council's Public Works Committee to talk about the proposed stormwater management fee will be at 5:30 p.m. In other City Council news, the City of Danville has a straw poll planned on fire cuts. Danville aldermen may find out tonight just how much support there is or isn't for cutting the 16 firefighters. Mayor Scott Eisenhower said Monday that there will be a straw poll of aldermen at tonight's City Council meeting to measure support for the plan to lay off 16 firefighters, a move city administration has proposed as a cost-saving measure. A straw poll would be an informed opinion survey of the 14 aldermen and would not be an official vote on the proposed cuts. In addition to the poll, aldermen would hold official votes focused on fees. Raising the existing public safety fee charged to both residential and commercial properties from $4 per month for most residents to $8. Creating a new monthly stormwater utility fee charged to all properties in the city. It would start at $350 per month for 500 to 10,000 square feet of impervious area. Most residences and max out at $1,000 a month for more than 50,000 square feet. On Monday, Eisenhower said the straw poll could determine whether firefighter layoffs are included in the city's spending data, which aldermen will vote on next month. He indicated that if the informational survey suggests that there is no support for the office, they won't be included in the proposed budget. Earlier this month, Eisenhower proposed reducing fire department personnel from 42 to 26 after the city lost an arbitration decision on the firefighters' contract regarding minimum manning and salaries. The current language stipulates there must be 13 firefighters on duty each shift. The city wanted to lower that number to 10, allowing it to reduce the overall number of firefighters gradually through attrition. City administrators have argued that it would produce long-term savings while reducing pension costs and while still providing adequate fire protection across Danville. The firefighters' union disagreed, arguing that it would compromise the safety of firefighters, residents, and their properties, and predicted that its overtime costs would increase. Eisenhower said the arbitrator's decision adds another $1.3 million to the city's proposed expenses for next fiscal year, which begins May 1st. Sharon Pickering and a few fellow city council members have argued against the cuts. This is going to cost us more to lay off 16 people than it is to keep them. Pickering said, who asked at a council meeting Saturday for aldermen to take a separate vote on firefighter cuts rather than it being part of the budget plan. Pickering said she did not request a straw poll on the cuts, but instead a separate official vote at an upcoming council meeting. I feel like we should vote on this separately, she said Monday, because just like closing the fire station. We voted on it separately. And it's something that affects our safety. All right, and now news regarding the Danville Public Library upcoming events. The Danville Public Library, located at 319 North Vermilion Street, this week's Monday matinee features retired balloon salesman Carl. He ties thousands of balloons to his house to go on one last grand adventure, not realizing he has an accidental passenger, 8-year-old wilderness explorer Russell. The movie will be screened at 2 p.m. in the first floor meeting room. Refreshments will be served at 1:30 p.m. Public performance rights are made possible by the Danville Library Foundation. On Monday through Friday, children of all ages can explore other cultures. Each day, kids will hear stories and learn about languages, clothing, and food from a different area of the world. The Philippines, Africa, Latin countries, India, and Asia. The activities will take place from 3 to 4 p.m. in the children's room. Kids under 8 must be accompanied by an adult. This month's Teen Flicks movie on Monday features a teen named Ferris Bueller. He decides to call in sick from his school to embark on a wild adventure. The movie will begin at 5 p.m. in the second floor meeting room. Teen Flicks is for youths 12 to 18. Public performance rights are made possible by the Danville Library Foundation. At 3:30 p.m. Tuesday in the children's program room, youths 5 to 11 make a baked potato treat at this week's Kids Snack Club. Kids under 8 must be accompanied by a parent. At 5 p.m. Wednesday in the children's program room, the Danville Dashers will join youths 12 to 18 to make bubblegum during Teen Do It Yourself. At 5 p.m. Thursday in Teen Space, the Teen Book Challenge will focus on the Battle of Jericho by Sharon M. Draper. The activity fee for youths 12 to 18. And now some of the obituaries for today. Angelica Yowell. Angelica Nicole Yowell, 16, of Westville, passed away at 2:07 a.m. Sunday, March 19, 2017, at Riley's Children's Hospital in Indianapolis. A celebration of Angelica's life will be held at 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 22nd, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, located at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Pastor Ramey Gordon will officiate. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, prior to services at the funeral home. Memorials in her name can be made to American Asthma and Allergy Foundation or the Vermilion County Animal Shelter. Dorothy Paris. Dorothy May Paris, 80, of Danville, died at 8:36 p.m. Saturday, March 18, 2017, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rorvet Funeral Services, located 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Gertrude Robinson. Gertrude M. Robinson, 80 years old, of Danville, died at 6:47 p.m. Friday, March 17, 2017, at Carroll Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at noon on Thursday at New Life Church of Faith, located at 1419 North Bowman Avenue, and that is in Danville, with Pastor Leo Davis officiating. Burial will be in Danville National Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon on Thursday at the church. Leek and Sons Funeral Home, located 304 East William Street in Danville, is in charge of arrangements. And today's the special piece on a philanthropist, 101 years old, who has died. David Rockefeller was the last of his generation in a famous American family that taught its children that wealth brings great responsibility. Even as children, he and his siblings had to set aside portions of their allowances for charitable giving. That lesson lasted throughout his life. To mark his 100th birthday in 2015, Rockefeller gave 1,000 acres of land next to a national park to the state of Maine. Rockefeller died in his sleep on Monday at age 101 at his home in Pocantico Hills, according to his spokesman, Frazier P. Seitel. He was the grandson of Standard Oil co-founder John D. Rockefeller and the youngest of five sons and one-time daughter born to John D. Rockefeller, Jr. He was also the guardian of his family's fortune and head of a sprawling network of family interests, both business and philanthropic, that range from environmental conservation to the arts. Unlike his brothers Nelson, the governor of New York, who hungered for the White House and was briefly vice president, and Winthrop, governor of Arkansas, David Rockefeller wielded power and influence without ever seeking public office. Among his many accomplishments were spurring the project that led to the World Trade Center. No individual has contributed more to the commercial and civic life of New York City over a longer period of time than David Rockefeller, said Michael Bloomberg, a former mayor and fellow billionaire. I have long admired his commitment to the city, which began with a $1 a year job working as a secretary to Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia. During my time in City Hall, he was always there for the city when we called. Unlike his other brothers, John D. III and Lawrence, who shied from the spotlight and were known for philanthropy, David Rockefeller embraced business and traveled and spoke widely as a champion of enlightened capitalism. American capitalism has brought more benefits to more people than any other system in any part of the world at any time in history, he said. The problem is to see that the system is run as efficiently and as honestly as it can be. Rockefeller graduated from Harvard in 1936 and received a doctorate in economics from the University of Chicago in 1940. He served in the Army during World War II, then began climbing the ranks of management at Chase Bank. That bank merged with the Manhattan Company in 1955. He was named Chase Manhattan's president in 1961 and chairman and CEO 8 years later. He retired in 1981 at age 65 after a 35-year career. In his role of business statesman, Rockefeller preached capitalism at home and favored assisting economies abroad on grounds that bringing the prosperity to the Third World would create customers for American products. He parted company with some of his fellow capitalists on income taxes, calling it unseemly to earn $1 million and then find ways to avoid paying the taxes. He didn't say how much he paid in taxes, and he never spoke publicly about his personal worth. In 2015, Forbes magazine estimated his fortune at $3 billion. As one of Rockefeller's grandchildren, David belonged to the last generation in which the inherited family billions were concentrated in a few hands. The next generation, known as the cousins, are more numerous. Rockefeller was estimated to have met more than 200 rulers in more than 100 countries during his lifetime, and often was treated as if he were a visiting head of state. In addition to the philanthropy that touched and lifted innumerable lives, Rockefeller's connections and keen aptitude for issues made him a valuable advisor to presidents of both parties. Yours truly certainly included, said former President George H.W. Bush. He said Rockefeller was a wonderful friend to him and his wife, Barbara. Under Rockefeller, Chase, now known as J.P. Morgan Chase, was the first U.S. bank to open offices in the Soviet Union and China, and in 1974, the first to open an office in Egypt after the Suez Crisis of 1956. In his early travels to South Africa, Rockefeller arranged clandestine meetings with several underground black leaders. I find it terribly important to get over all impressions beyond those I get from businessmen, she said. But Rockefeller took a lot of heat for his bank's substantial dealings with South Africa's white separatist regime and for helping the deposed, terminally ill Shah of Iran come to New York for medical treatment in 1979, a move that triggered the 13-month U.S. embassy hostage crisis in Tehran. Rockefeller maintained the family's patronage of the arts, including its long-standing relationship with the Museum of Modern Art, which his mother had been a fervent patron of. His private collection was once valued at $500 million.
Cedric had to leave. This is Kathy. I'm going to finish up for you today. This is Midwest Voices, which is an editorial. Approval ratings are no big deal. Can we forget about approval ratings and get a budget deal done in Illinois, please? Democrats are touting a poll that shows Governor Bruce Rauner's approval ratings are somewhat less than desirable. Yet they ignore the fact that the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan's, approval rating is worse. New poll, Rauner hits all-time low, was the headline on a news release sent Wednesday by the Democratic Governors Association. The survey by the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale shows that Rauner's approval rating is 36%. Big deal. Madigan's approval rating in the same poll was 26%. Senate Republican leader Christine Redaño's rating also was 26%. All the polls tell us is that Illinois political leaders are very unpopular, not exactly earth-shattering news. Pat Quinn, the man Rauner defeated in 2014 to become governor, had an approval rating during his last year in office of 31%. Only Rhode Island Chief Executive Lincoln Chafee had a lower rating among governors. Then there's the man Quinn replaced, Rob Blagojevich, who was the least popular governor in the United States with an approval rating down to 8% in 2008. The low rating was not surprising. What was surprising that even 8% of the Illinoisans thought Blago was doing a good job. Polls and ratings give us plenty to talk about around the water cooler, but they don't get us closer to solving Illinois' problems. The last time we checked, the unpaid bill backlog was getting so big that it looks as if it will be nearly impossible to catch up anytime soon. That pension liability? Yep, it's still there, the worst in the nation. As is Illinois' credit rating. Talk about a rating that matters. Democrats and Republicans can argue all they want about who's more unpopular and who's to blame for Illinois' woes. Newsflash, we don't care. Let's get this fixed. And that was published or taken from the Rockford Registered Star on Friday. And this one, gasoline tax? Yes. Toll roads? No thanks. There's one consensus that state senators and representatives have reached during this session in the Indiana General Assembly. Whether Republican or Democrat, legislators believe the state must find a way to fund infrastructure for Indiana's aging roads for the next 20 years. There's a way to fund the projected new $1.2 billion annually that fairly impacts all users of roads and is transparent in future handling of the contentious issue of establishing more toll roads in Indiana. First, drivers must pay their fair share. Gas users would see a 10-cent a gallon increase in gasoline tax from 18 to 28 cents. Diesel would go up a dime. Both would go up 1 cent each year through 2025. In addition, drivers of electric cars would pay $150 annually as their share of the road costs. This taxation process must remain transparent. Legislators need to realize that in return, Hoosiers expect a fair and open delivery of services from the state. And that's from Anderson, Indiana, the Herald Bulletin on Sunday. And this is Kathy signing off for myself and Cedric for today, which is March the 21st. You have a good day.